The Data Reaper podcast is a companion which provides extra insight into the weekly report found at viciousyndicate.com. Join us for a deeper dive into the numbers to help you improve your Hearthstone game.
Hello and welcome to episode 72 of the Data Reaper podcast. I'm your host, Ridiculous Hat, and I am joined as always by Zach FireEye. Zach, how you doing?
How you doing, Hat? Merry doing Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Well, it's Christmas Eve as the time of this recording, 1:30 in the morning for me. Actual Christmas Eve for you. But yeah, this should come out over the Christmas holiday weekend, so hope you all are having a great holiday. And Blizzard gave us a little gift. They gave us a nerf patch that didn't leave us with an Evolve Shaman Christmas, so thank you, Blizzard. We appreciate that. And we've got a lot to cover, because I don't know about you, Zach, but on ladder...
Nobody has a clue what's going on. Nobody except me.
Except
Nobody
you.
Except me, yes.
I told you before we started recording, this is maybe the episode where I'm most interested in knowing what's happening. And Donkey's website broke. I'm so used to just going there and just looking at what people are playing, but I need information. So I need to talk to you.
Yeah, you'll have it. You'll have the information. You'll have far better information because, you know, you can look at a bunch of lists and their win rates or whatever, but it's hard to see what's actually going on unless you really dig into the data, how archetypes are performing in terms of, you know, what builds are performing, which builds are not, which cards perform. What's the potential scope for improvement? There's a lot to look into. And, you know, the meta is still young. Even the decks that weren't nerfed or weren't affected directly by the balance changes are still developing further. So there's much to discuss there as well. So we should just start. I think the best way to start is with the Messias class. And the most popular one after the balance changes, which is Mage. Mage did not get the nerfs, but it got buffs. And it got buffs that made people start exploring Wildfire Mage, you know, with...
Again.
Yeah.
Again. For a third time.
Here's the thing. Wildfire Mage is definitely an archetype that people are interested to play. And if you give them a good excuse, they will do so without hesitation. It's a deck that's clearly players want to make work. And the developers also want to make work by giving them multiple buffs. This is the second time that they buff Wildfire specifically. Now that it increases the damage of your hero power throughout the game, that means that the effect persists after playing Magister Dawngrasp, which means if you play the Wildfire and Dawngrasp repeats it, your starting hero power is 4 damage. That is very threatening, and people have explored how to best utilize this kind of synergy. And there's a lot of stuff being explored. And some of the stuff, you know, I posted on Twitter, a list from Orange. That tweet was bait. Forget about that. but there are some stuff that's promising. Now, this archetype is extremely messy. And since it's messy, its aggregated win rate is going to be really, really bad. It's going to look like tier 4. However, when you dig through all the garbage, there's definitely some directions that are more promising than others, and if they end up being curated and maybe improved potentially further, we could definitely see something competitive popping here. It definitely looks a lot better. Like, you know, previously Mage outside of Muzaki had no hope of competition. And now I'm seeing signs of a deck that, you know, maybe it's tier 3, maybe it's even tier 2. It really depends on, you know, whether people improve current builds further. But there's definitely something to work here. It's a different story altogether from what I saw before. Now, what kind of direction is the most promising one? I would say there are two promising directions. It's not even just one build that, for me, catches the eye. I think the first one is like one that was propagated by Possessi.
The world champion himself.
Yeah, the world champ. Yeah. Multicaster in combination with a bunch of cheap spells like Flurry, Brain Freeze. You have the Wildfire. This build also runs like Arcane Intellect. And the purpose is activate your multicaster as quickly as possible. Find your Wildfires, find your Dawngrass. The deck has a very low curve, tops out at like Mask and Mordresh, and go to work that way. You have a bunch of, you're running like Tour Guides and Mana Feeder Panthera, so the Panthera can get activated by both Tour Guide and Amplified Snow Flurry. So it's a pretty decent package in that kind of deck. And you're just playing a pretty low curve, like fast list that tries to aggressively find its hero card and its Mordresh, which are its top end win conditions. I can see several adjustments that maybe we could do with that kind of build. Like, I'm not sure about the Arcane Intellect. I'm not sure about, like, this list is commonly running Harpies for the armor gain. Like, maybe we want to run Barrier. I don't know. Maybe we want to run other stuff. But this seems like a direction that you can definitely start working with. And if you improve this deck even a little bit further, I'm seeing it definitely can see competitive play. It's definitely a deck that looks good enough to stick. Now, the other direction is, you know, a bit of a higher curve. You're not running, like, cheap spells. You're running mostly impact spells to fuel your Dawngrasp, and you run the Clumsy Courier Rune of the Archmage package. Possibly with Parrot 2, though I'm not sure. Even though Parrot got buffed and definitely has enticing synergy, specifically with Arcane Overflow, it's hard to fit all those pieces. This direction, unlike the multicaster one, looks a lot messier. But again, I'm seeing the ceiling of this deck being fairly close to the multicaster build, and possibly can definitely compete with it and be even the better variant if we can fix some of those things. Now, again, through this podcast, after like 3-4 days, I'm not going to be able to refine and work on these variants to an extent that I'll be happy with. But this is something that I'm definitely going to enjoy doing next week, and like really try to find the perfect 30s of these kind of variants. But there's definitely something in both of these variants, and it's definitely close. At the very least, they're tier 3. At best case scenario, they could be even tier 2 if they improve further. So Wildfire Mage, again, even though the aggregated win rate is not going to look good, I think has potential. Like, the balance changes did enough to push it to a competitive level. And, you know, people just need to keep exploring what kind of things we can do with this archetype. But I'm optimistic that it can stick and we can actually have a mage deck that is not reliant on Encanter's Flow. That will be refreshing.
Yes, I've been playing a good bit of Hero Power Mage, the Wildfire Mage, and there are a bunch of different builds I'm trying. I'm leaning more towards the multicaster stuff and trying to go with a lower curve minion dense build, and it's okay. It feels like it's, you know, it's still got some compromises, and there are still some things that it's not quite good enough at. It feels like you have to choose between building early board and being powerful late to push damage to end the game, and sometimes you're just not quite good enough at one or the other or both. But there's promise and potential, and it's fun. It's a fun deck to play, and you get to make, like, really goofy, huge hero powers, and Reckless Apprentice is very satisfying. It's been enjoyable.
Yeah, which is this is an engaging deck for sure, and it's proof in the numbers. Like, people are just thirsty to play this.
Yes, including myself.
Yes, it's definitely can be a lot of fun to play, but it's not the whole story for Mage.
Unfortunately.
I did talk in the last two podcasts about you know, the combo strategies, the turn 7, turn 8 combo strategies. What do we need to do to address them? And in these balance changes, Blizzard pretty much hit almost every car that I singled out as a culprit for enabling lightning fast combo strategies, which are the mass mana reduction cards. These are the cards that really caused these strategies to emerge. They nerfed Celestial Alignment. They didn't nerf Final Showdown, but they did hit Morgue Artificer, which directly impacted the Lifesteal Demon Hunter. They obviously hit Mithrawad, which was very relevant for our Warlock. And they hit Octobot. What they didn't hit is Enchanted Flow. And I was worried that if they didn't nerf one of these decks, then it would end up being sort of a gatekeeper. Because Mozaki Mage is a deck that is lightning fast in terms of its ability to finish games. If you get an Enchanter's Flow on turn 3, turn 6, turn 7, it's already a threat to end the game. And it will usually do so by turn 8 at the most if it gets the Enchanter's Flow on time. And that was my concern about it potentially gatekeeping the meta. And when you look at Celestial Alignment Druid, which was a hard counter to Mozaki Mage, got nerfed. Lifesteal Demon Hunter countered Mozaki Mage. Garrote Rogue also had a very favorable matchup against Mozaki Mage. Mozaki Mage was left alone. Enchanted Flow was not addressed. Now, I could see the argument not addressing it because maybe you're concerned with the players at Bronze through Gold that still play Quest Mage these days with a whopping 45% win rate and you don't want to take that deck away from them. Maybe you should have just nerfed Mozaki. In any case, I strongly feel like this deck should have been addressed. It wasn't. It was left alone. And now, turns out, it's stronger than it was before the balance changes. It doesn't come as a shock to me at all. And while it isn't a tier 1 deck, it's definitely comfortably a tier 2 deck at higher levels of play. It looks a lot stronger than it did before, far less fragile, I would say. The meta is far more favorable to it and can definitely have a lot of joy. In fact, if people at Top Legend weren't so quick to, you know, fire off their Poison Rogue, then this deck would possibly be even better than tier 2, because, you know, Poison Rogue is like this hard counter that people play just to beat the Mozaki Mages, like 80-85-15 matchup, something like that, maybe even 90-10. And without that kind of strategy to just hard counters Mozaki Mage, Face Hunter is another effective counter. It just does pretty good work against the rest of the field. It does fairly well. Like, if you don't come in, if you don't have a reliable way of killing the Mozaki Mage by turn 6-7, you are not favored in the matchup. For me, that is a problem. For me, that is a miss. For me, this is what the balance changes missed the mark the most of. Overall, the patch was good, but if there's a, you know, sore spot in this patch, it's definitely the lack of attention to Mozaki Mage. And Mozaki Mage is going to gatekeep the meta, and if the meta ever slows down even a little bit, immediately the Mozaki Mages will pop up and remind people that we're still having a turn 8 combo deck, at the very least turn 8 that keeps a check and doesn't allow slower strategies to really thrive. So that's the I think that out of all the balance changes, that's the my least favorite part about them. And yeah, I absolutely despise playing against this deck, and many others do, because of how it just completely forces you into a very linear gameplay where they have one way of winning. They do it every single time. They do it way too fast. Right, and they're hardly, and Enchanted Flow is as toxic as ever when it comes to that deck. Like, if they, like, the different, this deck does not function at all.
Yeah, I had this game where my opponent got 3 Enchanter's Flows, and they played a 2 mana Spring Water and hit 2 spells, and I just threw up. Like, ugh.
Yeah, it's just like, if they get Enchanter's Flow, pretty much you have about until turn 7. You're pretty much at the mercy of them drawing Mozaki. If they play Enchanter's Flow on 3, they win the moment they draw Mozaki. And for me, that's horrid, because that's a horrid experience. It reminds me of Lifesteal Demon Hunter at the start of Stormwind, when they didn't even need to complete the quest to kill you. They would just rely on the 4-mana Ilganoth combined with the first two phases discounts to just combo you on turn 7. And you would sit there on turn 6, 7 and ask yourself, is the game over? You're at full life, turn 6 and 7, and you're asking yourself, is the game over? Did they find Ilganoth? And this is the exact experience that you now encounter with Mozaki Mage. You reach turn 6, 7, you're asking, you're at full life, there's nothing else going on. They didn't do anything. They didn't even attempt to play a game of Hearthstone during all those turns. And you're asking yourself, is the game over? Did they draw Mozaki? And sometimes I would play against that deck, and Mozaki would be bottom 5, and that's the only way I would win. You're at the complete mercy of just this single legendary card, whether it drops to their laps or not. So to me, this deck is a leftover of the Solitaire 5, and it wasn't addressed, and it needs to be addressed probably the moment Team 5 gets back from the Christmas break. Now, is it a problem for most of ladder? No. It is mostly a problem at top legend players. People who play at high MMR. When I play on ladder, I run into it quite often. It's around 7, maybe a little bit more, 7% of the field at top legend, which doesn't sound that bad. But to be honest, whenever you queue into that deck, it kind of, you know, makes your whole ladder experience worse. It's just like these kind of decks just shouldn't be prevalent in the format. That just don't even attempt to play a game of Hearthstone and just kill you on turn 6, 7. That's way too fast. So yeah, that's pretty much the sore spot right now of the meta. But the other things have mostly been addressed, right? But we this was kind of a leftover.
And people were definitely aware of, hey, this is probably going to be a thing. And it's seen disproportionate play since then. But playing against it, I understand why. They're real good at just kind of killing you if you don't pressure quickly enough in exactly the right way. You have to pressure in exactly the right way. So just, you know, I would be curious to see what the format looks like without this, and without one other deck that's pretty good at killing from hand, that is actually maybe a little slower now. We talk about the Rogue section, we'll get to that. There are some ways to maybe play around it by gaining a lot of armor really quickly, but that kind of sucks.
I mean, they kill you on turn 6, 7. You don't even have time to gain armor. It's just like there is little counterplay to this deck without just straight up killing them before they find Mozaki. That's pretty much what you need to do. And again, you're at the mercy of them drawing Mozaki. If they like Encantus Law on 3 in a Mozaki in hand, is pretty much game over, turn 7 at the most. So you have very little control. You can't even mutinous them very effectively because of how like they can go off before you can even play your mutinous. And Mutinous is just a complete guessing game, right? Whether they have Mozaki in their hand or not, whether they have a multicaster in hand or not. So it's just, there's no real reliable way of beating them other than hoping for the best, right? Yeah. Hoping for the best and just asking yourself whether the game is over turn 6, 7. I think that's something that is horribly wrong when that, you know, combo decks need to kind of tell you that they're approaching their win condition, right? You can kind of tell, like, when, you know, Celestial Druid was about to kill you, or Lifesteal Demon Hunter after it got nerfed in its last iteration before the balance changes, you could tell when it was going to be over. But Mage is pretty much reliant on just drawing this one single card. So for me, that's a big problem. But again, not a problem that plagues ladder right now, unless you're like, it's a small portion of ladder to keep that. That's important to keep in mind. It's just that as long as this kind of deck is around, your dream of getting consistently to turn 10, 11, 12 in the current format is going to be, you know, a fleeting hope.
because it's enough for one of these decks to exist. You don't need five. You don't need the solitaire five to keep the meta fast. You just need one Mozaki. Anyway, onto Shaman, I think. Yeah.
Onto the other blue class.
Yeah, the other blue class, Shaman. Yeah. So Shaman got a nerf, Snowfall Guardian to 6 mana. It definitely had a lot of merit. The card was just broken. Like, at 5 mana, it was just super broken.
It was dominant and wild.
It was dumb. Yeah, it's a card that was the best card in literally every Shaman strategy in the format. It needed to be addressed. The fact that it was so good, even like whack elemental Shaman that played a bunch of minions and developed board still wanted to freeze, would rather freeze its own board and just have this in its deck than not. That's kind of an issue. But in any case, Shaman is still extremely diverse. Lots of strategies seen play. All of the strategies that saw play before the balance changes are still seeing play. And Snowfall Guardian is still a very good card at 6 mana, which goes to show that the card definitely needed that nudge. So you're seeing, you know, Bolner Shaman. We're seeing Freeze Shaman still hanging around, obviously. We're seeing Quest Shaman. We're seeing the two variants of Elemental Shaman and also the newly emerging Burn Shaman, right? That started to pop up after last report's database kind of closed. We didn't have a chance to look at it. And all of these decks look competitive. I would say all of them range from tier 2 to 3. But there are some internal changes. I think the biggest change for me is that the decks that see the least amount of play within the Shaman class are the ones that might be the best ones. When I say that, I mean Quest Shaman and Elemental Shaman. Those decks are a bit of sleepers. I think maybe they don't see as much play because they're kind of old, right? The Freeze, the Bolner Shaman, the Burn Shaman, those are new, fresh decks that people are more eager to explore. While we've been playing Elemental Shaman since midway through Barrens, right? Quest Shaman, we've been playing through Stormwind. Those are old decks, but they're really good right now. The Elemental Shaman, both of these variants are doing a lot of work. You don't need to change a lot of cards over there. And the Quest Shaman has gotten so much better because of the nerfs to the other, you know, to the Turn 8 to the Solitaire 5. The Solitaire 5 were a huge problem for Quest Shaman. And now that the Solitaire 5 is a Solitaire, I would say 2, then it makes things more bearable. You still don't want to run into Mozaki Mage, right? You're still going to have major problems in that kind of matchup. But other matchups are looking very good. It's very good against board-based decks. It's very good against things like Face Hunter, like the Quest Warriors, like the Librem Paladin. It has a lot of joy against them. And it also competes very well against other Shaman strategies. So Quest Shaman, very underrated. Very, very underrated. Elemental Shaman, you're playing at high levels of play. You want to smack people in the head. You're equipping your Doomhammer and you're going to do a lot of work. And the freeze build is obviously good against boars-based strategies because the freeze package is obviously good against that. So there's quite a bit of there. Now, the Freeze Shaman, I think, might be the third best deck just because there are 28 good cards in the deck. And then there are two Vipers that you need to swap in for something else. And I'm not seeing that 29th, 30th card that's worth running in Free Shaman. And I think that once people figure out what those cards are from the list that we had pre-patch, right, from the last report, back then we were running two Vipers to counter the Mithril robots. Right now, Vipers are not worth running whatsoever. You need to run something else. People are running like Serpent Shrine Portal. I really don't like that card. I don't think that card, I think there's probably something better than Portal. And once we find that those cards, I think the deck will improve further and get to a spot where it's tier 2-ish, something like that. The Guardian nerf definitely hit it, and you can definitely see that. But I think that there's definitely room to improve considering that gap in power when it comes to just filling the last two slots in that deck. Boner Shaman looks pretty good as well, pretty competitive as well. Win rate around the 50% mark. Obviously, you know, the stalling capabilities of Snowfall Guardian really helped it put it in a good position in the meta. Now it's a little shakier than it was before, but it's the kind of deck that I can see grow in power if we proceed to address what's left over of the Solitaire 5, and then maybe a turn 10 OTK becomes something that we seek more aggressively, right? That becomes that kind of finisher that maybe sets the tone for the rest of the format, because right now it doesn't. So Boner Shaman is also pretty good. And then there's Burn Shaman. I think this deck is a little bit overhyped. I think people have been, you know, I'm seeing the people already complaining about this deck, that this deck is, too good or something. Nowhere near. This deck is...
Seems sus.
Yeah, very, very sus. I mean, this deck is not bad, but it's like right now at best, it looks like tier 3. If you run a... My tip to you, building Burn Shaman, forget about the Imprisoned Phoenix. Run the good cards. And when I mean good cards, I mean Lightning Bloom, Wild Paw Cavern. If you're not running those two cards, then you're doing something very, very wrong. Caverns is what makes Bloom very, very good. I would recommend Orange's build. I think he ran like the hybrid variant that runs Wildpaw Caverns and Chidi Snowbolt, so you can still have that opening gambit of early board pressure that really helps you complement the burn damage, right? Because if you get an early Wildpaw Caverns and you start smacking your opponent in the head, then the burn in your Burn Shaman becomes that much easier to finish off opponents that way. So that probably is the best list that I've noticed so far. Maybe there's some improvements that can be made, but I don't see that big of a scope for improvement. Even though this deck is young, I actually don't see that much room to improve this deck compared to even Free Shaman, right? Which was more aggressively explored. I'm just like, Free Shaman, there's a clear way to upgrade this deck. With Burn Shaman, I'm less convinced.
Burn Shaman has all the earmarks of those three magic words, Zach. High skill cap.
Does it?
It's overrepresented by a lot of high MMR players. I've seen it quite a bit. It's difficult to play and has some very narrow sequences for success. And when it does, it looks insane. But I don't think the results are there. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's commentary in the future of just focused around the difficulty of piloting.
I don't see it right now. Maybe I'm okay. It's early in the meta. Maybe in a couple of weeks, I'll see something that supports that argument.
Oh, I don't think you'll see it in the data. I think people will make that argument. I don't think you will find any support for it.
Okay, that's what I was wondering, because like, if this is a true high skill cap deck, then I will notice it very, very soon. I'm not noticing it right now whatsoever. So if people bring the argument that Burn Shaman is the super high skill cap deck that is dragged down in its performance because people don't know how to play it, I'm really not seeing that right now. Maybe in a week or two, I'll change perspective, because we know that if there's a high skill cap deck, it takes a bit of time to really spot that in a dramatic fashion. But this is no Goro Rogue. No chance. This is not even close. This is not half as close. Yeah, this is nowhere near. So
keep in mind, Goro Rogue for us here in the show is the absolute exception where it actually does perform that much better by players that know what they're doing. I played a bunch of Burn Shaman, and there were a bunch of games where I'm like, I don't know what to do with these cards, and it felt like someone with more experience that could have gotten wins or could have been more successful. Because the sequence is so important and it's kind of narrow as to the windows that you have to actually close out games.
Yeah, but I'm not seeing like a Miracle Priest here. Not seeing a Garrote Rogue, a Lifesteal Demon Hunter. Definitely not. Nowhere near. Maybe over the week, maybe people learn how to play it better. But the most important thing that people need to do is run Wildpot Caverns, forget about Imprisoned Phoenix, and things like Molten Blast. Like, okay, don't run these cards.
Don't run meaty cards.
Yeah, just don't, just, yeah. So the media, like the media list was a good start, right? It was a good start, but there's clear, there are things that you can do better. And mostly caverns, just play caverns. If you're playing Bloom, play caverns. Like, there's absolutely no doubt about that. Anyway, so Shaman, again, very diverse class, viability, looks good, you know. But, you know, if you just nerf multicaster, maybe all of the all of its decks die out in a blaze of glory, which is a point I'm going to make at the end of this podcast. Anyway.
So, Mage and Shaman. Talked about Mage and Shaman, but let's talk about Rogue. The Solitaire 5. Two were remaining. One was Mozaki Mage. What's the other one, Zach?
The other is definitely Gerbert Rogue. So... you know, I tweeted about the balance changes and I said specifically, I'm not sure if some of those changes are enough. And when I said that, I meant mostly Octobot 3. I mean, Octobot 3 is a decent push, right? It's a, you know, push it by one mana, see if it's enough. I can understand the center. It's not like it's a mistake not to nerf it harder. Considering Team 5's approach is usually to, you know, gradually nerf things and see whether it's enough and then maybe possibly nerf them further. But Octobot, a 3-mana, is still an insanely good card. This feels very much like the first Mithra Rod nerf where, okay, you pushed it by from 3 to 4 and you nudge some strategy and then it comes roaring back at some point and it shows you that the card is still bonkers. And Octobot is not really... There's no delay. You can still see how good this card is, and Garrote Rogue is still a very strong strategy. The extent of how strong it is. How do I explain it? You nerfed... Remember, you know, we talked about... before the balance changes, about the only two strategies that really consistently counter Garrote Rogue. And they were Celestial Druid and Lifesteal Demon Hunter, two more members of the Solitaire 5.
Now, wait a minute. Zach, you just said Celestial Druid, they nerfed that deck, and you just said OTK Demon Hunter, they nerfed that deck too.
Turns out, yeah, and they nerfed those decks, and they nerfed those decks pretty hard, far harder than Octobot. So what happens is that Garrote Rogue is weaker in a vacuum, right? Because I'd rather have a 2-mana Octobot than a 3-mana Octobot. But the deck doesn't actually have any bad matchups because you nerf the only two consistent and reliable counters to it. So even though Garrote Rogue is weaker in a vacuum, top legend players queues up Garrote Rogue and he runs into opponents one after the other. And after 20 games, they'll come in and say to themselves, hey, I haven't ran into a matchup that I felt was I couldn't win or I was unfavored. Because truthfully, you aren't running into unfavored matchup because this deck doesn't have bad matchup because its deck's worst matchup right now is something like 45-55. That's Garrote Rogue's worst matchups at high levels of play right now. So there's nothing that actually keeps in a check. Now, is its win rate out of control? No. In fact, its win rate is not even tier 1 at top legend. But knowing what I know about Garoko and how the deck behaves, especially after being nerfed once, and seeing how the nerf hit it hard initially with the win rate, and then people adjusted and the win rate keep climbing back up, I can see this happening again, and I can see Garoko returning to tier 1 at top legend before long. Is it guaranteed to happen? I'm not sure, but it's guaranteed not to fall further from tier 2. I'll be very shocked if Garrote Rogue, with its current matchup spread, becomes worse than a tier 2 deck at the very least. Now, are you seeing less of it? Yeah. You see less of it because it got nerfed, and naturally decks that get nerfed see less play. People want to try out the new stuff, the Wildfire Mage. But people are going to come back to it before long. And in tournaments, it's still going to be permanently, if there are tournaments, like if there was a, let's pretend that there's a Master Tour next weekend, Garrote Rogue would still be one of the most popular choices for players because the deck is still damn good. And it's even harder to counter than it was before because you can't even bring Lifesteal Demon Hunter and Celestial Druid anymore. So Garrote Rogue, the nerf wasn't enough, really. And you're still going to see this deck be a prevalent competitor at top legend, especially like its matchups. Right, like, it feels even better than before to queue up Garrote Rogue,
right?
Because you actually don't have bad matchups. Like, you don't dominate opponents. It's not like you dominate, but you feel like every matchup is winnable. Oh, I ran into this deck, I'm fine. I ran into this deck, I'm also fine. I'm good with everything. You don't queue into Celestial Druid to say, oh, I have to kill them soon before the Celestial on 7. Or Lifesteal, oh, I better hope they don't have Glide. No, you don't have these experiences anymore. Anyway, Garrote Rogue, still good. But that definitely is not all for Rogue. Because Rogue, to me, looks like the strongest class in the format. In terms of just having so many decks that are just good.
It's got... I think there are three other highly competitive archetypes that we have to talk about. So where do you want to start? Let's start with Quest. Quest is the simplest to follow.
Quest Rogue is probably the best Rogue deck right now and one of the best decks in the format, period. It looks stronger than it did before the ban changes because, again, you nerfed some of the Solitaire Vive, and Quest Rogue's win condition becomes more relevant. There's less competition when it comes to finishers, and it's a very effective finisher that comes in fairly early. The good news is that this finisher can, it's not like 30 uninterrupted damage. It's a stealth minion. It's a big stealth minion that some opponents can definitely deal with. It doesn't, is not guaranteed to end the game, which is kind of why I really like the Quest Rogue design personally. But it's a very good deck. It has very strong tools throughout the game. The Gizmos is fantastic. We all know that. And Scabs is still Scabs, right? The Shadowcraft of Scabs is still a card. It's definitely a card hat. And if you want to pick up easy wins with Rogue, then, you know, Quest Rogue is the one to do. Like, since the balance changes, all I've been doing, I've been experimenting with Wildfire Mage, dumpstering my ranks, and then getting them back with Quest Rogue, pretty much. Like, okay, I dumpster too much. Time to play Quest Rogue, get those ranks back so I can start playing Wildfire Mage again. That's pretty much what I've been doing. Quest Rogue, very good. Same build, last report. Poison Rogue. Okay, Poison Rogue...
I've seen a surprising amount of this, and I don't like how good it is.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Another thing why I don't like Muzaki Mage being in the meta, because Muzaki Mage being in the meta means that people are so frustrated by their inability to consistently pressure it by turn 6-7, you start seeing people run Poison Rogue to counter the Muzaki Mage. And it's a very effective counter because it can out-solitaire the solitaire of Muzaki. And this deck is very good. It's possibly tier 1 at high levels of play where there are a lot of Muzaki mages, because an 85-15 matchup is very much worth it if it's even remotely common. And yeah, Poison Rogue is just good. So yeah, Muzaki mage propagating something like Poison Rogue, you're going to have a bit of a problem. Definitely watch out for Poison Rogue and try to pressure them as quickly as you can. This deck is very good. And then we have the maturation, I would call it, of Thief Rogue. And Thief Rogue is looking better. Thief Rogue archetypes are looking better than they did before the balance changes, which is, you know, partly the balance changes have something to do with it, but also because it continued its refinement. It's still a new deck, entirely new archetype that was still going, people would try to figure it out, and they're still in the process of figuring things out. And there's definitely something there. I specifically see a lot of promise. You know, the Thief build with Secrets, you know, we earmarked it as a candidate. Oh, like, this is the best variant that we've seen so far, until we started seeing Jesse Alexander's variant seeing more play with the non-secret build. And this one might be the best that Thief Rogue can offer. I would say there's still things that maybe you can improve in that specific archetype. I don't like Wicked Stabs. I think that they are very, they drag down Swindle so hard. Like if you play Swindle and draw Wicked Stabs, this is an issue that Quest Rogue suffered from as well. It's just something that you never want to see. You never want to Swindle and draw Wicked Stabs unless you're like super late in the game, just want to finish opponents off, and usually that does, it's not relevant enough. You really want your Swindles to draw you Secret Passage and Shadow Step. If you can even run 26 non-spells other than the quest, right, and like 25 cards that are not spells, then you'll do that. Because a Swindle guaranteeing a Secret Passage and Shadow Step draw is very powerful. The problem is it's hard to fit in some minions, right? There's a lot. So like Jesse runs like Extortions, which is another spell. Doesn't have great synergy in the deck, but it's okay. It's serviceable. I'm just wondering if we can push it further and really guaranteeing drawing Shadow Step, Secret Passage off of our Swindles, because I think that will make that deck extra consistent. But this deck, in its current iteration, looks a little worse than Quest Rogue. And I already told you that Quest Rogue looks like one of the best decks in the format. So being a little bit worse than Quest Rogue is a pretty good compliment to give it. It's at the very least tier 2. At the very least. So this deck looks better than the Secret Variant. The question is whether the Secret Variant just wants to give up and just go on like, okay, we're just playing Secret and we're just sprinkling in Wild Panel with Maestra and that and Double Agent. That's it. That's probably the best way to build Thief Rogue, is to put as little burgers into the deck as possible and just try to abuse Wild Panels, right? Just abuse Wild Panels and Double Agent. Null is really the card you want with Cutlass, and you're good to go. And just put the, like, the rest of the deck is just good road cards. So maybe that's what the Secret Variant needs to do to catch up with this other variant.
And let me tell you, turn one Secret Passage is a hell of a drug. Because I've played some turn one zero mana Nulls, and that is intoxicating. Or turn two multiple Nulls, just because the Secret Passage cards count before your mask comes off.
Yeah, it's quite something. Null is extremely powerful, pretty much carries this deck. Personally, I think that people, like when it comes to minions, right? We run around more minions. Jandis Barov immediately comes to mind, considering how good Shadow Step is. I advocate run Jandis Barov in this deck. It's probably a better finisher than Wicked Stabs. And there's probably maybe you run Tenwu in this deck as well. I mean, it's good with Wild Panels. It's pretty good. It helps your Mr. Smite be better in the late game. Just find good minions, serviceable minions, and make your Swindle insane. Because Passage in this deck is nuts because of Wild Panel. It's not just it's not like the turn one Passage. You don't need to do that. But just being able to Passage on three and finding a cheap Wild Panel to just take over the board is really important.
Yep. And this deck goes really wide with minions really quickly. Quite powerful. I've enjoyed playing Jandis again.
This deck is very on the beatdown. Like if you're playing like Quest Rogue versus this, Quest Rogue is more late game oriented, looking for that early that late game power spike with the playing the scabs with the stealth and setting up the lethal through the Battlemaster and such. This deck just wants to get an early null and just snowball out of control and just put stats on the board and beat you down.
It's been a lot of fun to play. The variant that you have been talking about, been trying it out with Mancrick and with Tenwu.
I posted a list with Mancrick because Mancrick is one of the things that you actually want to run with Swindle alongside like Passage. And the downside of it, it's not a rogue card. So if you draw it, it doesn't discount null if you draw it early, right? Because it's a neutral. But the upside is pretty huge, right? Because Swindle, you want to curate it. With Passage and Shadow Spell, but you definitely don't mind drawing Mancrick's Wife with Swindle. And the low spell density makes it pretty reliable, too.
And let me tell you, playing Mancrick and Jandis and Tenwu in the same deck again makes me feel right at home back in Barrens. But, Zach, I gotta tell you a game story, because the only time Dave mentions me in his podcast recaps when I tell a game story, so this is my turn. So, I had this game earlier where I swashburgled on turn 4, and I got a hero guff card, and I just started gaining some mana. You ever play an Edwin with 13 mana crystals? Because if you haven't, I strongly recommend it.
Was there a smite involved too?
The first card I drew was Shadowcrafter Scaps. I played multiple other cards. The Edwin grew in my hand the following turn on 14 mana. There was indeed a smite, and a 12-12 Edwin attacking my Quest Warrior opponent for lethal damage. It was very enjoyable.
Yeah. I mean, Swash is like, here's a tip, you guys, about Swashburglar. Swashburglar is a serviceable card in this deck. But make no mistake, when you're trying to find good cards in the opening mulligan, what you really want is Cutlass and Null. And then pretty much everything else falls off in comparison. Don't settle for a Swash on one. That is not a good play in this deck. What you really want is Null and Cutlass to discount the Null before Maestra comes out of hiding, comes out of her disguise. So
I'll keep a Double Agent on the coin, and I'll keep Yeti if I have a Foxy. And otherwise, it's only Null and Cutlass.
Yeah, Null and Cutlass, pretty much. So that's my tip to you guys. And try out this deck. This deck is very good. And try to try Mancrick and Jandis and Tenwu instead of like the Wicked Stabs and the SI7 Extortion. This is a tweak that I've made that I think could be what puts this deck over the top. Anyway. Any other rogue? No, that's it. That's it for rogues. I mean, a lot.
Any other rogues? Only 4 high tier decks that are completely different.
Yeah, rogue looks like in very good shape. Looks very effective right now, for sure.
Yep. All right, it's Hunter time, and Do we have to tell people about the newest Hunter deck on the block? Do we have to tell people?
There's a lot to say about Hunter. Let's start with the simple and easy.
Start with Face Hunter, which is probably one of the best decks, right? Like, probably one of the best decks in the format.
One of the best decks in the format. One of the best decks to climb to Legend. People, you know, always ask this question. It's one of the best ones, for sure. Honestly, Trog is not bad in this deck at all. It's not like you're going to take off Trog. You're going to happily take off Trog, and there's obviously something better. It's actually not the case. It might be that next week I'll figure out that, you know, you still want to run Trog in this deck. But even if you don't want to run Trog, I think it's very easy to, you know, you swap out Trog for like Neophyte or Wound Prey, and you, like, the deck plays out the same. You still have the Anomaly and the Initiate to snowball off of in the early game as your one drops. So Face Hunter is not desperate for Trog. It would have loved to keep playing the old Iron Deep Trog, but it really doesn't mind the changes, and the deck is still very good and very clean. So that's Face Hunter. And then there are other Hunters lurking. And honestly, a lot of them don't look bad at all. I do question some of their like ability to compete in a more refined, maybe more ruthless meta, but they're showing better results than they did before. And I'll go over them. We know about Big Beast Hunter. This is a deck, this is an archetype that we already saw quite a bit of promise before the balance changes. And now after the balance changes, maybe even has more space to work with. The build that we had in the report before the patch looks very, very good. Like the Jewelman of Nazoth seems to be a better card than Revive Pet. Maybe you run both. Maybe that's too greedy, but there is definitely something in that archetype that I'm seeing quite a bit of promise in. And this is a deck that could be positive win rate tier 2. Yes, tier 2 Big Beast Hunter.
What a world we live in.
Yeah. This could be a deck that definitely is competitive and good and viable. And you can take the list that we have in the report for a spin. And it's not going to be an embarrassing experience, I guarantee it. When it comes to other Hunter strategies, like, I'm even seeing little rumblings of Quest Hunter coming back and maybe not being embarrassing. maybe being playable, maybe being competitive. There's definitely something there. It's a little bit low sample size, so I can't really confidently say it. And there's something else that there's a low sample size of, and I'd rather not say it, which is Secret Hunter. And it's no, guys, we're not groaning because we hate Secret Hunter. It's not the Secret
Hunter. It's Barnes Hunter. That's what the problem is.
Yeah, it's just the fact that this deck runs Drekthar, Injured Blade Master, and King Mukla. Basically, the list that we had in the Theorcrafting that didn't work before the balance changes is now working. It's working. Now, how good is it? Win rate maybe hovers around 50%. Maybe a little worse, maybe a little better. Hopefully a little worse. Drekthar Mulligan's win rate is like 20% better than the second best card.
What I'm seeing right now, the Mulligan win rate,
it's like 20%.
It's
Are you looking at Aegis Replay?
I am looking at Aegis Replay. 77.9% of the Mulligan second card is 58.4%.
It's something like, something like...
This is Allura-esque.
Yeah, this is stupid. It's stupid. Pretty much what you want to do with this deck is you're trying to find Drekthar as hard as you can. If you find tracking, then that's okay. Maybe you're not that upset because tracking can find you to Drekthar. And maybe Bunker is a good keep in this deck. But
seems fine. Again,
like, it's like 20% difference. Like, if you have Drekthar... like, this deck has like a 50% win rate. If you have Drekthar, the win rate like is like 70%. That's pretty much the story. Maybe even more than 70%.
Yeah, but it also tells you how the games without Drekthar are going to go. Not very well.
Over 70%. It's like closer to 75, maybe 73, something like that. If you have Drekthar in the opening, it's stupid. Anyway, you can take this deck for a spin and just find Drekthar and win games, just cheese games that way. Thankfully, it's not even the second best Hunter deck. Honestly, I think the Big Beast Hunter is better than this deck. As you know, shocking, but I think the Beast Hunter is even better than this deck. So Hunter actually looking potentially diverse. I think a lot of the archetypes, again, are underexplored a little bit. They don't see as much play. Maybe people are not excited about playing Quest Hunter or Secret Hunter to give me more data on those. But there's more to it than just Face Hunter. And Hunter, I think, looks okay.
Yep. And Hattrick as well, who's a known Hunter streamer, has been experimenting with like a Death Rattle Beast Hunter that I'm curious to see where that lands. It's like the Rat King sort of build. Don't know if it's good enough, but I'm curious to see if we end up getting the data to look into it.
I don't know. Rat King sounds sus. A lot more sus than a humongous owl, for sure.
It does. But, I mean, you know, they can't all be humongous owls. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, such a great card. Absolutely love humongous owl. Especially now. Now it's just cute. I mean, before Phylactery, yeah, I can understand. But it's just a hilarious card. I mean, such a funny card. Anyway, next class, Warrior. Let's talk about Warrior in like two sentences. Combo strategies are still around. The inevitability is still around, which means Control Warrior is just hopeless.
Yeah.
There's Quest Warrior, and that's it. You'll be pleased. I don't know if pleased is the word, but you will find out that Circus and Malcolm is actually okay in this deck. it's perfectly fine. I mean, it procs at Questing. Maybe we don't want run around Vipers, like a Viper anymore, because Viper is not worth it. But, you know, a Questing is a Questing hat. And that's all that matters. Like, are we really running removal Manda Cannons? What do you do with Manda Cannon against, like, so there's so many strategies where that card is not even relevant. So, I don't know. Just put your Pirates... as many pirates as possible and complete the quest and win the game. I mean, what else are you doing with this deck?
Do we have data on Rokara the Hero in this? I've seen some Quest Warrior builds starting to run the Rokara Hero card.
Yeah, I don't like Rokara in this deck. thankfully, I don't think she works particularly well in this deck. It's us. It doesn't make sense, right? You complete the quest around the time where you can actually play Rokara, and you know the weapon is just wasted. So you're playing 7 mana for 5 armor in an aggressive deck and a hunter hero power, which might be relevant. Like, yeah, you can just point at face, but I don't know about that. That sounds weird.
I wouldn't, but I've seen it, so I'm wondering if the data has seen it too.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen it. I highly doubt it's going to be in a list next report based on what I'm seeing. Quest Warrior is very good, right? It got a nerf, but the nerf was really like super gentle. And the deck is one of the best decks in the format. Again, it's the same story. Up until like top legend, where this deck has one of the lowest skill ceilings I've ever seen. Like, you know, we've had Garrote Rogue having unprecedented high skill ceiling and me raving about it for the last like 2 months about how these results are just unprecedented. I've never seen anything like it and it was so fun. And now I have this Quest Warrior deck and it's like the exact opposite. It's one of the lowest skill ceilings I've ever seen. Like, this is one of the most linear, I don't know how you, I don't even want to say it, like dumb deck, right? It's so dumbed down in its play pattern.
Zach, you're sequence heavy.
Sequence heavy? That's the polite, politically correct word of saying it? Yeah. This deck just, it's still competitive and decent, even at higher levels of play. It's not like it's bad at higher levels of play. But the difference between how dominant it is at like platinum, diamond ranks, and how tame it is at top legend against good players, it's just astounding. It's really like, it makes Paladin looks like it makes buff Paladin look like some Einstein deck in comparison. Anyway, let's proceed. That was Warrior. You're not going to see, like, people are asking why are control Warrior. The reason why it's not viable, there are two reasons. One, there's too much inevitability, so grinding out opponents doesn't work. The second problem is, why can't Warrior join in like and become like a deck? Like, why is Galvinger not seen and maybe doesn't enable a deck that can work like Boner OTK Shaman, where you're like playing control, you're playing defensively, and you're setting up some combo on turn 10, 11? Why can't Warrior do that? And the answer is, unlike Shaman, which has Multicaster and Primal Dungeoneer, an actual card draw, Warrior's card draw in a control strategy is very slow and very unreliable. You've got Outrider's Axe, which relies on your opponent actually putting minions on the board. So if you're playing a combo mirror, if you're playing against a strategy like Muzaki Mage, what are you even drawing off of? It's even hard to draw off of, like, against decks that have some minions, but not a lot of them. You need your opponent to constantly put stuff on the board so you can axe them down. So that's a very slow form of card draw. And then you have like Cash, which is more like a tutor, a cycle rather than draw. And you have a bunch of tradables that you can run, but this is not draw. So slower warrior strategies actually lack draw that would allow them to run like Galvinger, Faceless, combo kind of stuff. So this is what Warrior is actually missing in order for it to be able to compete. And this is why I keep banging out about whenever somebody says that card draw is a problem, I tell them no, because card draw actually increases strategic diversity when it's not paired with heavy mana reduction. And when you ask yourself, why is Control Warrior so garbage? Part of the reason is it doesn't have a multicaster. It doesn't have ways to reliably draw cards, and it just can't get to the end game.
There's a really scuffed card draw engine in, like, To the Front Glory Chaser, but you have to draw so many cards and get so late in the game just to actually use it. It's just so... You can't just fire out the Glory Chaser on 3 and expect it to live, so you have to set up this crazy build-up turn.
You have to have minion density to combo with the Glory Chaser. Otherwise, you're just relying on, like, you need to draw specifically to the front. You need to draw specifically Glory Chaser. And you need to draw specifically the 3-drop. That's...
Scrapsmith, yeah.
Scrapsmith. That's the only way you draw. That's not... You cannot put that in a control weird deck and expect to see any kind of success. So, like, the draw is very slow for that strategy. And this is why they just can't get their... win condition to come online consistently, even on turn 11.
Yeah, like the best warrior card draw card is like Harbor Scamp. That's not going to make Galvengar warrior work.
Yeah, yeah, it's just not happening. So that's the issue for warrior. And we move on to Paladin. And, you know, Paladin got nerfed directly and indirectly. Team 5 decided to nerf around hero cards. I understand the reasoning. They want hero cards to be cool and powerful for them now. So Kariel was untouched. They ended up nerfing Alliance Bannerman, which is a prevalent card in all of Paladin strategies. So so nudging it is a good nudge to all Paladin strategies, considering their high win rates and high play rate before the balance changes. And then you also have the nerf to Trog. And this is another thing. Trog is still good in Paladin. It seems like it's very important for this deck to have a 1-drop to pair next to Aldor Attendant in order to get the 2-mana buffs going and get its early game going. However, it's possible, it's very possible, that the reason why Trog still performs well is because of just that need for a 1-drop. Maybe there's a better 1-drop. Maybe we want to run Righteous Protector in Libran Paladin now. Maybe we want to run Gnome Private in Libran Paladin now. I don't know. It's possible that there's a better 1-drop than Trog. But what I see from the data, the results that I see, is that this deck still wants another card alongside the Tendant to follow up with Hand of Adal, to follow up with Noble Mount and such. Maybe next week I'll figure out that there are 2 better cards to put in that are not 1-drops and make this deck entirely better, right? But for now, this is my tip to you. Keep a 1-drop next to Attendant and keep that early game consistency of Libran Paladin going. The deck is still very good. One of the best 3 decks in the format up until higher levels of play, where it dips a little bit, but not to the extent of Quest Warrior. It's still very, very strong, even at top legend. So that's Libran Paladin. When it comes to Buff Paladin, obviously this deck was affected, more heavily affected, by the nerf to Trog, because buffing Trog in the mid-late game is more important for this strategy to thrive, to succeed. The deck is still fine. Again, it's fine, but its play rate is low. Its win rate did drop off quite a bit, but it's still a good deck. Like, it's not like it's garbage now. Other Paladin decks, not really seen. That's pretty much all you can say. It's not like Big Paladin is suddenly good. No.
It's Brasswing will have to wait a little longer, unfortunately. Maybe someday, Brassy, but not today.
Yeah.
Okay. Warlock time. Zach, tell me, is Big Bird dead? Is the Owl Warlock deck dead?
Humongous Owl will always live on in our hearts.
And a Big Beast Hunter.
Yes, yes. We're still going to see our Humongous Owls, but probably not our Warlock, because our Warlock, you know, unlike other of the members of the Solitaire 5, got not 1 nerf, it got 3 nerfs. Maybe one of the nerfs is a nudge, is a gentle nudge, but nerfing Artificer and Mithrilbot, this deck just has no chance. Like, that is brutal. And yeah, the deck looks pretty much dead. Deader than dead. Non-existent. But is Warlock dead? Not so much. Handlock is still very, very good. Interestingly, though, Handlock is feeling some frustration running into Mozaki Mage's top legend, and that does keep this deck in check more like in a way that I was a bit surprised by, because you know, Hanlock, what did it get? Just a little bit of a nerf to touch of the Nathrezim. That's not gonna matter that much. That's not gonna matter much in most of its matchups. But turns out the meta is actually more hostile to Hanlock than it was before the balance changes, which keeps it in control. It's a very powerful deck on ladder. Throughout most of ladder, but when Mazaki Mage popularity reaches that 8%, maybe a little bit more, then Hanlock is starting to feel the heat, because it really, it's not a strategy that can reliably kill opponents, you know, by turn 6-7. That's pretty much it, which means that it's not going to have a great time against Mazaki Mage. Now I will say that I think that people are struggling with juggling its flex slots. Like, there are two Hanlock lists. There is no one best Hanlock list. There's a list that you want to run for the more board-based strategies, for survivability with full-blown evil and, you know, the mortal coils and such, to be able to deal with the opponent's board. And then there's, like, the neophyte stuff, the altar of fire stuff, that you want to run more against, like, the Mazaki Mages. The problem with that is that since there are less of the Solitaire 5, and some of them disappeared, it pays off less to run these cards. And then if it pays off less to run Neophyte, but you still want to run it against Mazaki Mage, it makes it more of a difficult juggle, right? You want to run Neophyte because you want to have a better chance against Mazaki Mage, but Neophyte is weaker overall against the field on average. So that's kind of the problems that Hanlock is having. But, you know, these are problems of a tier 1 deck that maybe falls off to tier 2 at top legend. Like, these are not the problems of a struggling deck. These are just what's preventing this deck from taking over the meta right now. Hanlock is a good deck. Other Warlock decks, not really feeling it. Like, the Ticketus stuff is, yeah. I mean, still Ticketus World. Yeah. Yeah. Like the Zoo stuff, I'm not seeing much there. You know, maybe Zoo Warlock with Quest. Maybe. I don't know. The play rate is too low. But Ticketus definitely not. I think Ticketus got weaker after this patch.
I looked up the win rate of the Ticketus deck since the patch, the bad one. It's the lowest I've ever seen on the website. 29.2% win rate at Legend.
Yeah, no, that was a total meme. The philosophy stuff, just forget about that. That was trash even before the balance changes. Anyway, that's Warlock. Hanlock, very good deck. Not unstoppable because of Mozaki. I mean, that's and Poison
like,
Rogue, right?
And like, Face Hunter too, right? Like, the Face Hunter matchup is
yeah, the Face Hunter is not a good matchup. That is true, but it's mostly about Mozaki Mages, and then the Mozaki Mage bringing in the Poison Rogues. That kind of that is like a big issue. Like, Hanlock, if it really wants to, it can do better against Face Hunter. The problem is they're trying to target. They're dropping the full blown evil and other removal for the Neophytes and Altar, and that is like, Altar is okay against Hunter, it's not a bad card, but you'd rather just prevent the early game snowballing, and full-blown Evo is one of the best cards against Hunter because of that.
Yeah, I've been impressed by that card. The issue is when you have a hand of full-blown Evils and Soul Wrens against a bunch of, you know, Encanter Slows and Knights, but it's full-blown Evils are a very strong anti-minion card, and it's quite flexible and scales up really, really well. And ends up being, you know, when you, even on turn 9, I have done, like, the big dark skies of 9 mana, 15 pings. That's, very little is going to survive against that. It's a really cool card.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you, but definitely, if you run, like, the Casey list, and you don't even run Soul Rend.
Oh, yeah. You're just going to get run over.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a big component of why I think when you're looking at the data and seeing the Hanlock Face Hunter matchup, you're seeing, oh, Face Hunter looks like a big counter. It's not as big of a counter when you run Sovereign and Full-Blown Evil. Anyway. Yes.
All right. So let's talk about the next class. Let's talk about Kurtris. I mean, Demon Hunter. Let's talk about Demon Hunter.
Are you suggesting, Hat, that this deck is... this class is carried by a singular card?
It's... I... I am not only suggesting that, I'm explicitly saying in Death Rattle Demon Hunter, Kurtris is a better keep than Razor Boar. Seems like something's going on there.
Yeah. Eventually, Kurtris is going to get nerfed, but because Demon Hunter is not particularly dominant, and they want to keep hero cards good for now, then it's going to be left untouched, which is fine. I think it's okay.
Yeah. It's the decks aren't offensive, but anytime you play against the card Kurtris, you're like, just enjoy it while you can, because this isn't staying this way.
Yeah, this isn't staying at six mana for a year and more. It's not. Anyway, Demon Hunter. Demon Hunter looks... I think people are heavily sleeping on Fel Demon Hunter.
Oh yeah, that deck's legit.
We did clean up this deck before the patch in the last report. And the build that we had in the report looks very, very good. There's some new twists, though. I'm seeing experimentation with running Guild Traders in order to, you know, you Guild Trader Immolation Aura, you Guild Trader Fel Barrage and slower matchups to get more damage down. There's definitely upside to that. And unlike Talented Arcanist, which is fairly common inclusion in this deck, but it's not an inclusion in the list that we had in the last report. The upside of Guild Trader is that you can trade it away when you want to. When you draw an Arcanist, that's it. You're stuck. Imagine drawing Arcanist, then you draw your Skull and you can't play the Skull. And you're just ending up not utilizing Arcanist as well as you could. The big upside of Guild Trader is you can just move it out of your hand, open up your space for your Skull, and just trade it away when you don't want it. And even though it costs two more mana than Arcanist, you can combo it with multiple damage spells, multiple damage cards. It does a pretty good job, and I'm intrigued by Guild Trader, especially when, you know, Viper is no longer as strong or as important. Maybe you still keep it for the Paladins, but there are definitely some slots there that you can swap out for Trader. In that build, I still like Mage Hunter in this deck. I'm not ready to cut that card from the deck just because Trog was nerfed, because it does have some other upsides and other matchups that not necessarily is Trog. You know, when you're playing, you know, expendable performance and rely on hero powering, like having a silence can be useful to get rid of a pesky taunt on possibly. But this deck is very good. How good is it? It's potentially tier one. Like the list that we have in the report before the balance changes, potentially tier one. This deck is very strong. And because the Solitaire 5, the turn 8 combo decks, some of them disappeared, a turn 9 combo looks more enticing to execute. Though it's not as consistent as you think it is. You still need to draw Kurtris or you cannot execute it. So you need to draw Kurtris first. And then you need to draw Expendables and Fel Fire Deadeye, and your opponent needs to have board, and then you can get to work. It's not like a hard outlier that just prevents, like, if this deck is dominant, it's like it's preventing everyone from getting to turn 12. It doesn't. Anyway, so Fel Demon Hunter, very good. Deathrattle Demon Hunter, also very good. I think it got stronger after the patch. I think it's easy to understand not why meta slows down, gives more time for expendable Urzul Giants to come down. Demon Hunter looks very good. Those are two decks that are performing very well right now. Lifesteal Demon Hunter, probably dead. The Artificer nerf? Remember how when I said just nerf Artificer, nerf Ilgenoth isn't enough to kill this deck. We need a nerf Artificer, and they did. They didn't nerf Final Showdown. They nerfed Artificer because it was a way to address two decks, right? Both Warlock and Demon Hunter. I could see the reasoning for that. And yeah, this deck is gone. However, maybe we run Final Showdown with Lion's Frenzy again. Maybe we go back to Brute People hat.
No way.
Maybe.
No way. Maybe.
I don't have enough sample size, but I see something there. Maybe this deck comes back. Maybe the Brutes come back at.
It's possible. Don't toy with me. Don't tease me like this. I still have
this
it in
golden. This
is
3-4 days. This is 3 days. This is 3-4 days. You didn't dust the golden brutes?
No. I don't really dust anything these days. it doesn't matter. I own every card. Who cares? What am I going to do with the dust?
I'm not explicitly saying this deck is back, but I am saying it's worth trying out. Like, the sample size, I can't, say with confidence. I can't. This deck has a play rate that is lower than 1%. It's too little to see. But what I'm seeing is not a bad deck. From the low sample size, that's not super reliable. That's all I can say. I want to see more of that just to be able to confirm or deny whether this deck is worth running. Big Demon Hunter maybe got a little bit better, too. Because, late game got slower, so there's more time to do your thing. Generally, any deck that runs expendable performers in Failfire Deadeye with Kurtress got better after this patch because the turn 8 strategies, some of them disappeared. That's all you need to know. So Demon Hunter, I think, is in good shape. Underrated class for sure. Maybe the most underrated. Yeah, considering its play rate. It should see more play. It should see more exploration for sure.
I'm just going to enjoy Kurtress while I can.
Or Brutes, Hat.
Or
I know you want to.
Okay.
I know you want to try it out.
I've been baited by Brutes being back before. They weren't and I was sad. So until you tell me for sure, I'm not going to get my hopes up again. All right. So somehow we are 9 classes in. And the 9th class is Druid, which is interesting because all Ahirun has been tweeting today is questionable Druid decklist at High Legend. But I want to know what's up with Druid. So we know that alignment is, well, I hope alignment is dead. I'm pretty sure
it is. It looks pretty dead. It looks pretty convincingly tier 4. The nerf, the nudge by 1 mana... the inability to immediately alignment falling on overgrowth is backbreaking. You did not have that. You could not afford that kind of time playing this deck. And now that it's delayed and this deck has dropped off pretty significantly, which is a good thing because we definitely didn't want that to be a meta defining proponent of the format. In any case, Druid is not dead. But people are incentivized of playing Druid just because, Trog was also nerfed from Chandra. And I'm here to tell you and confirm that Ridiculous Hat was right about Trog still being good in this deck. And if there's a deck that wants to still play Trog in its new iteration, then it's Druid. It's Taunt Druid.
For some reason, the deck with multiple board-wide buffs wants to play the self-replicating minion. Crazy.
I know.
It's Zach, crazy. You want to know my secret? You want to know how I knew? Because I was winning games the week before with 1-2 Trogs into Arbor Up. I basically never buffed them, and I was still killing people with them.
Yeah, it's just a good card in the deck. You know, even though I can see a world where Paladin cuts it and Face Hunter cuts it, with Taunt Druid, I think Trog just has a lot of upside. You want to go wide anyway. You don't mind running Mark of the Wilds to snowball an early game minion, so it works pretty well with that. And you have Arbor up, so who cares? Just keep running your Trogs. No, this deck doesn't see much play because Trog was nerfed, but it is very, very good. It is a good deck. It's definitely up there. It's definitely nowhere near an embarrassing choice. It can definitely get people. Now, I will say that there's another aggressive Druid deck, the Beast Kind, with Matriarch, that drops Razor Main Battle Guard, that is a very competitive alternative to the Taunt build. It might be even better than running Razor Main Battle Guard. I'm talking about you're just running mass beasts, like you're running Squirrel, and you're running Ram Commander to get your 2 beast tokens off. And you're running Dire Frost Wolf and Mulvarik and Matriarch basically with Oracle Valoon. That's kind of how this deck spikes in power. And it looks quite good. This deck is criminally underexplored. Maybe because people are not excited about playing this kind of deck right now, but there's definitely something there. This deck could be tier 2 at the very least, based on the way it performs at an admittedly low sample. But considering this has been happening even before the balance changes and I've noticed it, tells me that there's something here for sure.
Interesting.
Yeah. And also, low sample size, can't say too much about it, because again, it's like around 1% play rate. Clown Druid.
What?
Clown Druid could be back.
What?
Yeah. Clown Druid hat could be back.
I don't understand.
I mean, what is there not to understand? You nerfed some of the decks that kill you on turn 7, 8, and suddenly Carnival Clown with 9 mana is a win condition that could be effective. And there's no mass removal. There's not a lot of mass removal options in the format. Not a lot of decks are running things like Soul Mirror. So in Brawl, there's no Brawl in the format. So Carnival Clown pretty much ends the game. And turns out another thing that's interesting, you may not even have to run Guardian Animals anymore. Maybe you just go completely into a Cenarion Ward with Solar Eclipse. Maybe you run Coldtooth Mine to consistently draw your Survival of the Fittest, or maybe you even run Yashraj. Clown Druid, it could be something. I think that people are just, like, I don't know, don't care to play this, but it looks quite good based on the low sample that I'm seeing.
Remember how at the beginning of the episode, when I said that I was excited to hear what you had to say, and I didn't know where it was going to go? This wasn't on my roadmap. Didn't see this one coming.
Yeah, Clown Druid is something. Like, if you want to get your clowns on, you can definitely do that. And, you know, by the way, Guff is a really good card in this deck. Turns out. I know, it might be a shock to you. But, yeah.
I did see that one coming. I did see Guff being good. I did. Foresee that.
Yeah. Anyway, and maybe you run Vandar as well to discount the clowns and get them turned down earlier. There's definitely some stuff there. Even without, like, usually, you know, I like Clown Druid. I used to play Clown Druid. What I didn't like is playing Guardian Animals and just the feeling of drawing beasts. Like, whenever you draw beasts, you feel bad because you always want to just cheat them out of with Guardian Animals. So I hated the fact that you ran like 6 patches. It felt like you were running 6 patches. And now maybe you don't even want to run that. So maybe I'll give this one a spin for sure. I want to try this out. And we'll try to work something out for the next report and give you a Clown Druid list to try out, because it looks fine. It looks good.
This one's for those in the supporters chat. I give it 4 games before you delete the deck. 4 games. That's my line.
I don't think so. This looks better than Wildfire Mage, Hat. This looks better than Wildfire Mage.
I hope I'm wrong. Just throwing it out there.
Anyway. Celestial Druid may have died, but we could be going back into a clown late game. And, you know, yeah, definitely. There's something here. So Druid is definitely viable. Just because you're seeing less of it doesn't mean it's dead. And the decks that you see less of, you barely see, are actually, there's some like Beast Druid and Clown Druid. Watch out for those two. Yeah. So we finish with, as usual, feels like it's a usual thing now, a Priest. What's going on with Priest? So I think it's easy to understand why Big and Quest Priests are still kind of garbage, and you don't want to play these decks because of the problems that they had encountered before are still prevalent right now. Miracle Priest. Miracle Priest lost Trog. That hurts. That hurts a lot. That really helped the specific variant with the rally. And the fact that Trog is now gone or like weaker, yeah. Like, you really need a Trog in its previous iteration to make that work. The Drekthar variant with Rally, specifically. But the Jombre variant, of Miracle Priest, with Malagos and Bloodweavers as the only minions, as well as Insight to consistently draw them, as well as Gift of Luminance, where you just go off with Nasmani, Gift of Luminance, start playing all the one mana spells, discount all of them, discount an Elec Mount, Psych Split, empty your hand, play Malagos for very, very cheap, reload your whole hand and put a board that your opponent really cannot deal with in an Anacondra fashion. That works. That's fine. I mean, it's not the best deck, but it has a high skill cap, very high skill cap. But at higher levels of play, it can maybe near 50%, maybe a little bit less than that. It's definitely playable close to, you know, where I saw its potential with the Trog build before the balance changes. So if you want to play some Miracle Priest, you definitely can. But you probably want to give up the rallies and run the Jombre build.
Makes sense. No sign of Shadow Priest?
I'm seeing barely any Shadow Priest. I really can't comment on that archetype. People are just not playing it. So
yeah. No. Yeah. Well, 9 interesting classes and priests. I'll take it. It's fine.
I mean, Miracle Priest can definitely be fun. I can definitely see the appeal in this kind of deck. So I don't think that there's a really dead class. Now, in terms of the current meta and the health of the format, I think we were very, very close to like perfect chef's kiss meta. If we just, you know, nerfed Octobot by another mana, maybe up the stats, they don't really matter. But if Octobot was 4 mana and Mozaki, like maybe you push Mozaki to 6, or you nerf that card that's actually the problem, which is Encanter's Flow, to 4 mana. Just those two changes with Flow and Octobot would have just completely removed turn 7, turn 8 combo decks from the format. Which then would have brought you to like finishers around turn 10, 11, Bolner stuff. You'd see people complaining about Bolner. If people are planning to complain about Bolner, we're in a good spot. If people are complaining about Expendable Kurtress, we're in a good spot. But maybe that's nitpicky. I think the current meta is fine. We can definitely survive through Christmas with this. Team 5 definitely addressed a lot of the issues in the previous format. And there's a lot of diversity. There's a lot of different strategies. A lot of them are underplayed. The meta is more diverse than it seems. When you consider a lot of these sleeper decks that look quite good and people don't play much of them, there's so many options right now. So things are looking quite good in terms of diversity. This brings me back to like a subject, you know, I tweeted about this and I want to sharpen this point further. Brian Kibler tweeted yesterday about his issues with the meta, and I'll quote him. You know, they had a tournament yesterday with the Thais Invitational, and they saw the tournament of people playing quirky combo decks. And he says, it's kind of amusing that Play Hearthstone just had a patch this week focused on weakening OTK strategies, and pretty much 100% of the casting for Thais' tournament right now is TJ and RDU trying to count an OTK damage. I've been saying for a while now that one of the fundamental issues with the game right now is that there is too much card draw, which has been exaggerated across multiple classes with the release of Multicaster. It's just too easy to find all your pieces every game. So again, pinpointing the issue as there's too much card draw in the format, and this is why these combo strategies thrive. And my point is, this is pinpointing the wrong issue. Because you can have card draw, but it actually, if the card draw costs mana, if you actually need to spend mana drawing cards, you're not going to see combo strategies that kill you on turn 7-8. It's just not going to happen. Nobody kills you on turn 7-8 by playing a bunch of Arcane Intellects. So you can have plenty of card draw, you can have an abundance of card draw, you're not going to see these combo strategies thrive. You're only going to see them when that card draw is coupled with mass mana reduction, which you see in Mozaki Mage. Mozaki Mage, you don't die to the Cram Session or the Multicaster. What kills you is the Encanter's Flow on 3. That's what kills you on turn 6-7. If they didn't have Encanter's Flow, they would have to maybe combo on turn 10. And even then, it's not... I guarantee it, that deck is gone once Flow is gone. In any case, here is another thing that I need people to keep in mind. One of the things that came from that conversation on Twitter is that people are agreeing that the combination of draw and mana reduction is what leads to these strategies, which means that card draw is as much of a problem as the mass mana reduction, which again, I strongly disagree with. Passionately so. And the reason is because card draw, the availability of card draw, and the abundance of card draw is what is actually enabling the diversity that you see in the format. The fact that classes are not dead has a lot to do with the fact that there is an abundance of card draw. That different strategies have card draw that caters their specific needs. And classes, if you remember, Shaman, first staff of Barons, dead class, doesn't work, doesn't function, irrelevant. You give them Primal Dungeoneer and suddenly you see strategies thrive. You give them a multicaster and suddenly you see five viable Shaman decks. None of them are offensive. And a lot of it has to do with the brilliant, yes, brilliant design of Multicaster. Multicaster is not the problem. Multicaster is the savior of classes. Multicaster is why potentially we could see the first viable mage deck that plays minions and is not reliant on Encanter's Flow in 10 months. So blaming Multicaster for the arrival of combo strategies that kill you at turn 8 is entirely missing the point. And saying that there's too much card draw is entirely missing the point. Because without these card draws, Mozaki Mage doesn't exist, but also other mage decks will not exist. And then you're gonna complain about, oh, there are no mage decks that are viable. When there's an abundance of draw in the format, you increase strategic diversity. And yes, you increase the chances that there will be combo strategies or like control strategies that are able to kill you on turn 10, 11, finish the game at that point because they actually need to spend mana on their draw. They need to spend mana on their draw, which means they need to spend more mana on survival because they fall behind, because it actually costs initiative to play their draw. I don't mind the availability of decks like Bolnir Shaman and Fel Demon Hunter that can kill you if they get all their pieces lined up correctly around turn 10. I really don't mind the availability of these strategies. If somebody minds the availability of these strategies and say that these decks are suddenly a problem, which I got kind of got that impression, then we have a different conversation. Suddenly, maybe the conversation is maybe we don't want win conditions in the late game. We don't want finishes in the late game at all. Because I don't mind decks finishing games on turn 10, 11. And I won't apologize for that. In any case, card draw is important. Abundance of card draw actually increases strategic diversity. The risk, if you pair it with mana reduction, indiscriminate mass mana reduction, you're increasing the chances of the arrival of combo strategies that kill you turn 7 and 8. Just eliminate those cards, and you eliminate those combo strategies as seen by the nerf to Celestial Druid, the nerf to Lifesteal Demon Hunter, the nerf to Owl Warlock. Do you see Warlock killing you on turn 7 and 8 anymore? No. Did you nerf their draw? No. Do you see Druids killing you on turn 7 and 8 anymore? No. Did you nerf their draw? No. Do you see Demon Hunter killing you on turn 7 and 8? No. Did you nerf their draw? No. So please, just nerf Flow, and you have mage strategies potentially be viable, have cards and options in their hand, and I guarantee you, they will not kill you on turn 6 and 7. Keep Shaman the way it is. Leave Multicaster alone. The class really appreciates the strategic diversity that is enabled by Multicaster. And no Shaman strategy is reliably killing you on turn 7, 8. Other than Burn Shaman, which is more of an aggressive variant. And it's not even the third best deck within its own class. I mean, come on. What are we complaining about? Just nerf the mana reduction that you didn't nerf in this patch. And the meta will be chef's kiss. And we'll be able to complain about how Bolnir Shaman is uninteractive or whatever. And when we get to that point, that's when you know the meta is in good shape.
Yep. I look forward to complaints about turn 9, turn 10 damage happening, because sometimes it's okay for damage to happen in the game. And, I don't know, it's just, drawing cards is cool, just make it cost full retail, and then things are fine.
When card draw actually poses a risk, where I have to spend, like, do you think Garrote Rogue would play Shroud? What is Shroud in Garrote Rogue? It's basically Arcane Intellect. No deck is going to be a combo deck that kills you on turn 8 by stacking a bunch of Arcane Intellects in its build. I'm sorry to say, it's not happening. Maybe they kill you on turn 11. Maybe they're not viable because that's too late and it's not a viable strat to run a bunch of Arcane Intellects in your deck and fall behind a board. That's all I'm saying. If card draw actually posed a risk of falling behind too hard because it costs mana, which means you don't have mana for leftover to remove your opponent's threats on the same turn, then maybe it's fine. And maybe we need to appreciate the fact that cards like Multicaster allows you to play 5 different Shaman decks that are viable, and finally allows you to play a Mage deck that's not reliant on Incantus Flow. And you look at that, you look at a deck that plays Incantus Flow and has like a low win rate, like 10% higher than any other card because of Incantus Flow. And you're looking at that and you're saying, the problem is Multicaster? What? Anyway, my rant.
I understand the experience of watching someone else draw their entire deck and kill you is unpleasant. But it is once again the misalignment of which part of this experience matters with versus what am I seeing? And you're seeing draw, 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 and you want that to not happen anymore. I don't want my opponent to draw their deck and kill me.
But the reason why they're drawing so hard is because it doesn't cost mana. The reason why I'm seeing complaints, I'm sick of running into Mozaki mages that just come in and kill me. Like I'm seeing Regis Kilbin tweeting about how he's getting OTK'd by Mozaki Mage on turn 6, how they drew their whole deck by that point and just have Ignite left over or whatever. All you need to ask him is, how many Incantus Flows were played this game? And the answer would probably be 2. They cannot draw their whole deck by turn 7-8 without Incantus Flow.
Yeah, there's no way to do it. And all of the card draws based on cram session Mozaki with a bunch of cheap spells. It's if you pay full retail for all those spells, it's just that the deck doesn't exist.
Does not exist whatsoever. And maybe Mordresh will kill you on turn 10. And if you're upset about Mordresh killing you on turn 10, then we have an entirely different conversation.
Yeah. I'm okay with Mordresh, but I'm biased. I don't know. I have a golden one. You can nerf him if you want. It's fine.
No, we don't need a nerf Mordresh hat. It deals 10 damage. Last time I checked, the health pool was 30. It's not enough to kill you. We're fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fun. Okay, so that's going to do it for our initial look. We have a report next week on the 30th. Someone asked, well, Zach, isn't that the holiday week? Are you still going to be doing the report? They don't know you very well. Yes, you're still going to do the report.
The Data Reaper does not have any holidays.
No.
The only holidays is the balance patch. That's it.
And if you could work then, you would.
Probably.
Yeah. So, we will have a report next week. We will have a podcast next week. I don't know the exact release timing of that episode because it's New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, next Friday, Saturday. But we'll figure it out. We'll talk. It'll happen. There will be an episode. And of course, huge thanks to our VS Gold members, our Patreon members, our VS Silver members, everyone that subbed and subscribed. Huge thanks to Evil Dave for the podcast transcriptions. Huge thanks to Steven Sensei for the intro and outro, and huge thanks to you for listening. Have a good one. We'll talk to you soon.
The Data Reaper podcast is an official production of Vicious Syndicate. Don't forget to sign up and contribute your game data to improve the quality of the weekly Data Reaper report. Instructions are available on our website, along with lots of other weekly content, at viciousyndicate.com. Thank you to all of our patrons and data contributors for proving there's strength in numbers.